Osho, Tao, The Pathless Path, Volume 2. Talks on extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 12.
The first question. Once you said that Krishna is a Brahmin, but really he was a Kshatriya. Nobody is ready to accept him as a Brahmin, which is correct. When I say something, there is no need to ask anybody about it. Meditate over it. When I said that Krishna is a Brahmin, I mean that he has known the ultimate truth. Brahma is the ultimate truth. By knowing it, one becomes a Brahmin. When I say Krishna is a Brahmin, I mean Mahavira is a Brahmin, Buddha is a Brahmin, so is Christ, so is Moses, so is Jesus, so is Lao Tzu. I don't mean the caste Brahmin. By birth, nobody is a Brahmin. Nobody can be. I also know that he was a Kshatriya. Kshatriya by birth, that is meaningless. That is formal, accidental. I don't talk about accidents. By accident, I am born in India, but I am not an Indian. By accident, you may be born in Germany, but you are not a German. By accident, you may be black or white, but you are neither. The accident can only decide the form, not your being. Your being is beyond accident, beyond caste, beyond religion, beyond nation, beyond color. When I am talking about the innermost core. So I repeat, Krishna is a Brahmin. Even if the whole world says he is not, I don't care a bit. Their knowledge is of no significance at all. It is surprising, said the professor to his wife, how ignorant we all are. Nearly every man is a specialist in his own particular line, and in consequence, he is as narrow-minded as it is possible to be, for he knows nothing of what other men are doing. Yes, dear, said his wife. I, for instance, he continued, am ashamed of my failure to keep abreast of modern science. Take electric light, for example. I have not the least idea how it works. His wife gave him a patronizing look and a smile. Why, Herbert, I am ashamed of you too. It is simple. You press a switch, that's all. Now this wife thinks that by pressing a switch you know all about electricity. That's all, simple. And she says he's ashamed of her husband, that he does not know even how electricity works. You also know how electricity works. You press the switch, that's all. so simple. But has anybody any idea how electricity works? And I'm not talking about you, and I'm not talking about this professor. Even the man who worked miracles with electricity, Thomas Alva Edison, had no idea how it works. It happened once that he went to a summer resort where people did not know anything about him. At least nobody recognized his face. And he was very happy, because famous people become very tired of being recognized the whole day. They are never at ease. So he was very happy, running on the beach, collecting pebbles. He had again become a child. Somebody invited him, that why don't you come? You will enjoy. Looking his childishness on the beach, running and playing with the foam and the pebbles and the seashells, somebody invited you, come in our high school. We are having an exhibition, and children have done many beautiful things. So he went. A small boy was explaining they had made an electric fan. He was the inventor of electric fan. And the boy was explaining how it works. And he became interested and he asked, do you know how electricity works? What is electricity? And the boy said, that I don't know. I will call my teacher. So the teacher was called. Of course, he was a graduate in science. He came to explain. And he does not know who is asking the question. And he tried to explain, but what can you explain? You can explain the mechanism of it, but electricity in itself is inexpressible, what nobody knows. And Edison insisted that, tell me, what is electricity? You are explaining me how the fan moves, how the switch works, how the motor works. I'm not asking about the motor and the fan and the switch. I am asking about electricity, the power behind it, what it is. And the man said, you are asking such a difficult question. I am just a graduate. I will ask my principal to come. He is a DSC. He will explain. The principal came and he tried hard. But Edison insisted. The DSC principal was very much puzzled. How this man is asking such a significant question. And he became very much embarrassed because he cannot explain. So he said, sorry, I will inquire, hire people who are more in the know. Edison says, I don't think anybody is going to help. He said, what do you mean? He said, I am Thalwa Thomas Edison, and I don't know myself what electricity is, so whom you are going to inquire? He had invented 1,000 things which work through electricity, the radio, the gramophone, the fan, and 1,001 things. He was one of the greatest inventors of the world. And he said, you don't be puzzled and don't feel embarrassed. I myself don't know what electricity is. I play with it. I manage. It works. That's all we know, how it works. But what it is, nobody knows. Not even now anybody knows. So you must have asked somebody who had the mind of this wife, who says, why, Herbert, I am ashamed of you. It is simple, you press a switch, that's all. I also know that Krishna is a Kshatriya. But that is not what I am saying to you. I am not interested in the accident of his birth, in which womb he was carried for 9 months. I am talking about his innermost experience. That experience makes him a Brahmin, because he has known the Brahma. One who knows is a Brahmin. One who does not know is not a Brahmin. The second question: don't do unto others, you don't want others doing unto you. Bhagwan, I was meditating about it, but I feel stuck. I can't reach the bottom. Please, can you tell me something about it? First thing, never meditate on anything negative. Don't do unto others, you don't want others doing unto you. This is a negative message. Don't do. If you want not to get stuck, then meditate on something positive. And the same thing can be made positive. Do unto others, you would like others doing unto you. Then you will not get stuck. When you move in a negative commandment, you cannot move much. How can you move in a negative commandment? A negative commandment is like death. What you can meditate about death? You start and you are stuck in the very start. You can meditate about life, certainly. Life has so many things to meditate. The flowers, the birds, the love, the rivers, the stars, the peoples, the beauty of it, the song of it. You can meditate about life infinitely and you will never get stuck, because vast is life, infinite is life, because the whole universe is life. In fact, when you meditate on life, meditating, one day you will come across death too, because death is just a part of life. As other things are part of life, love, birth, joy, sadness, happiness, so is death. Death is not something against life. Death is not something beyond life. Death happens in life. Death is the intrinsic part of life. So if you meditate on life, you will come to know death too. But if you meditate on death, nothing will happen. What you will meditate? You will feel simply darkness and stuck. How can you move in non-being? How can you think about nothing? You will go round and round, and sooner or later you will feel, what are you doing? Chasing your own tail. Where are you going? There is nothing much to meditate. Meditation has to be about the positive. You can ride on the positive. You can go to the very source of existence, but on the positive, with the positive, in the positive. And of course, if you go in the positive, one day you will come across the negative too, but as part of the positive. And then you will know the negative too. Listen, I would like this. Do unto others, you would like others doing unto you. Make it that way. Then you have 1001 things to think. And when you do unto others what you would like them to do to you, naturally, the negative part of it, don't do unto others, will follow like a shadow. Remember, the negative is the shadow of the positive. The positive is the figure, the negative is the shadow. If you run, your shadow will run behind you. If you stop, the shadow will stop. But don't get too much involved with the shadow. Otherwise you will get stuck. If you try the shadow to run and then you want to follow it, then it is impossible. Then you will feel very impotent. You will create a very crazy situation for yourself. Look, all the Ten Commandments are in a way negative. If you go deep into Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you will not find a single negative commandment. Everything is positive. With the positive, there is growth. Judaism has not grown at all. It remains stuck. In fact, it has not added anything to Moses. It is where Moses left it. Hinduism has grown tremendously. It goes on growing. It is not a dead stone. And what is the reason of it? What is the secret of it? The secret is, it moves through the positive. If you get stuck with the negative, then you are from the very beginning moving in a wrong direction which will not allow you much movement. You are heading for trouble. Judaism has not evolved any subtle religion. Jews have remained the most irreligious people on the earth. Most worldly, money-minded, prestige-oriented, but have not developed deep into meditation or prayer. Religion to them is just a formality. Religion is not something tremendous. It is not something that fetters you, uproots you, gives you wings. It is not something that destroys you and recreates you. It is something that you manage, not that it manages you. It is not something that you become possessed with. Jews did not like Jesus because he became too much possessed with religion. Jews did not like Jesus because he was too otherworldly. Jews have not liked any people who were born to Jewish families who became too much possessed of religion. They have always denied and rejected them. All the messiahs they deny and reject. Because a messiah is a person who is almost in a passion. Religion is his love. It is not formality. He can stake his life for it. If crucifixion comes through it, he is ready to go to the cross. The day Jesus was ready to die on the cross, he said that he is not a Jew in the ordinary sense. Jews were puzzled why this man is so mad. Life is so beautiful. Why are we worried about things higher than life? Life is enough. They have lived in the merry-go-round. Eat, drink, be merry. And of course, sometimes go to the synagogue too. That too is part of social formality. Remember, if you start your meditations with a negative, you will be stuck. And another thing, if you think too much of the negative, you will become desert-like. You will not flower. You will become dry. Your juice won't flow. Because the juice cannot flow in the negative. For that you need some positive passion. Something alive so that it can flower. If you want to meditate, contemplate, good, but choose something. Meditate on a rose flower. It is positive. Meditate on the rising sun. It is positive. Meditate on the moon. Meditate on a child playing, laughing, jumping, dancing. Meditate on something which is flowering, opening, unfolding, which is alive. Meditating on a negative is meditating on the desert. And you become that which you meditate. You will become that which you meditate. Meditate on love. Meditate on life. Meditate on God. And if something looks very beautiful to you, but the statement is negative, turn it into a positive statement. Because each statement can be turned into a positive statement. And great is the change. When you want to say no, try to say it in such a way that it has the form of yes. Don't say it, no. You can always find a way to say in such a way that even it is a no, it comes in the form of yes, and it will be helpful to you. There are people you must have come across who are so addicted with the no that even sometimes when they want to say yes, they find a negative way of expressing it. The third question, beloved Bhagwan, will you marry me? Again? The day you become a sannyasin, you got married with me. It is from Dharma Chetana to ask again means, have you forgotten? Somebody asked Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher, when he was very old, why didn't you ever got married? Did you never propose to anybody? Kant brooded over it and said, to think of it, yes, once I had proposed to a girl. The inquirer became very much interested. He said, then what happened? He said, something went wrong. I proposed again. I proposed, and the next day I proposed again. And the girl got very mad. Kant's memory was not very good. And can you marry a person who proposes again? And the girl had agreed just the last night. This man is not reliable. Even after marriage, one day he will come and say, who are you and what are you doing here? Sannyas is a marriage. And deeper than any marriage, deeper than the marriage that you know about. In an ordinary marriage, two bodies meet. At the most, if one is very fortunate, two minds meet, which is rare. The marriage, sannyas, is not of the body, not of the mind, but of the souls. Two beings meet. To be with a master is to be in deep love with the master, to be surrendered, to be open, to go with him wherever he is going, with gratitude, with trust. You are married, Chetna. Keep alert, don't go on forgetting. The fourth question, my son has fled away from home and is here in the ashram. He is free to have any sort of thought, but first he should complete his graduation studies so that he can understand the world in a better way and take the right decisions. I can understand the difficulties of a parent. Try to persuade your son. I am all in favor with you. Try to persuade him. But don't enforce. Don't preach. Don't threaten him. Subtle grasp threats, avoid them. Just open your mind to your son. Put your heart before him. Tell him this is how you feel. What you are saying is not very meaningful. So leave the decision to him. For example, you say my son has fled away from home and is here in the ashram. There must have been something wrong in the home. Otherwise, why one should escape from the home and come to this ashram? Because this ashram is another home again. Think about your home. What is wrong there? Something must be missing. Love, aliveness. Something must be missing. Watch it. Your son has given a signal that something is wrong. Maybe the father and the mother are not in deep harmony and the house is a chaos. Maybe the children are neglected, or maybe too much care is taken off. But anyway, the child must be feeling suffocated, either by indifference or by too much love and too much care. Balance is missing. Put your home right. Just taking the child back home will not help much. He will escape again. So think about it. Your child has given you an indication that something is basically wrong. First thing. Second thing you say, he is free to have any sort of thoughts. But first, then you are just talking. You are not giving him freedom. What do you mean by but? Parents have that trick of talking. They say, you are completely free, absolutely free, but. And that but is too big. And it destroys all freedom. And parents have the old habit of saying that first grow up. And then you will understand. But excuse me, I would like to ask, have you grown up? Have you ever seen any grown-up person? Maybe the person is well-educated, graduated from the university, was on the merit list, has a good job, is married, has children. Everything is going fine. But look deep, is he grown up? Is he really understood what life is? Has he any awareness? Or he is as ignorant of life as any child? Sometimes it happens children are more alert than grown-ups, because children have a more fresh consciousness. Less dust has gathered on their mirrors. Yet they have been not poisoned by the society. What you call your university? It is an institution in the service of the society. It poisons. It manipulates people, forces people into the service of the society. It destroys people's individuality. It makes out of beautiful people clerks, collectors, commissioners, tehsildars, station masters, things like that. Out of beautiful people, out of beautiful children, it creates ugly things. Dead. The whole education system is a way how to destroy a person, his freedom, how to destroy his consciousness, how to destroy his aliveness, how to make him usable, how he should be reduced to a means so that the society can use it in profitable ways. So he becomes instrumental. He becomes a soldier in the army, kills and is killed, or becomes a clerk in the office, or a collector, or a commissioner, and wastes his whole life for something he cares not at all, and goes on doing things which he never wanted to do in the first place. And more death comes closer, you become more and more afraid. And fear cripples, and then you cannot change. It is very difficult for a person who is at the age of 40, 45 to change. Because now everything has settled somehow. It has been a long struggle, things have settled, and now to change seems very difficult. Now one simply goes on waiting for death to relieve. You say, but first he should complete his graduation studies, so that he can understand the world in a better way. Do you think educated people understand the world in a better way? I have never come across. Educated people are the worst. Because they have such a screen on their eyes. They may understand what is written in the books, but they don't understand what is there in life. An educated person has such a cultivated mind that he does not allow anything from the real to enter. He looks in the books, but he never looks into faces of people, in the eyes of people. He never looks around. Even if God comes, he will go on reading his Bible. And he may even say to God, wait outside, I'm doing my religious meditation or something. There is a Hindu story. A very great scholar used to do chanting every morning for 3, 4, 5 hours. Early from 3 o'clock in the morning, he will start doing his chanting and prayer. For years together, and he was a great scholar, a great Sanskrit scholar, a very learned man. Finally, Krishna had compassion on him, and one day he came. Krishna stood behind the man, put his hand on his shoulder. The man looked and he said, what are you doing? Can't you see I am doing my prayers? Is this the time to disturb me? And Krishna shrank back and disappeared. Now this story looks very absurd. The man has been chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna for years. Now Krishna comes and he cannot recognize. He thinks some intruder has come. And some very foolish man, he cannot see that the scholar is meditating. And he may not even have taken the morning bath, and he touches his body and spoils the whole thing. And the scholar had to go to take a bath again in the Ganges, again start his prayer. And he was very happy that he got rid of this foolish man. Who was this? If Jesus comes to a Christian who is pondering on his Bible, will the Christian recognize Jesus? If Mahavira comes to a Jaina who is on his fast and doing his mantra, Namokar, Namokar, will he be able to recognize? Impossible. To recognize truth, you need naked, nude eyes, uncultured, uncultivated, uneducated. I can feel you care for your child, that's true, but what you are saying is not true. I can understand, and I would like your boy go back home. I'm all for it. But what reason you are giving is not right. I can feel your love for the child. You are worried about his future. You are worried what he will do, how he will earn his bread. I can understand. I am in total sympathy with you. But the reason that you are proposing is absolutely false. You say graduate, first he should complete his graduation studies so that he can understand. Understanding never comes that way. For understanding to come, one has to one day unlearn all that one has learned. For understanding to come, one has to become a child again. One has to wash all that the society has done. One has to make his heart clean. Once a man came to Buddha, very cultured, educated man, a pandit. And he asked Buddha a question. Buddha said, please, right now I cannot answer. The man said, why you cannot answer? Are you busy or something? And he was an important man, well known all over the country. And of course he felt offended that Buddha is so much busy that he cannot give a little time to me. And he said, I walked thousands of miles. And in those there were no trains, nothing. It was really difficult. It was dangerous to travel. And he had walked. He had come from deep south. Buddha said, no, that is not the question. I have enough time. But right now, you will not be able to receive it. He said, what do you mean? Buddha said, there are three types of listeners. First type is like a pot put upside down. You can go on answering, nothing will enter in him. He is not available. Second type of listener is like a pot with holes in the bottom. It is not upside down, it is exactly in the right posture as it should be. But it has holes in the bottom. So apparently it looks it is being filled, but it is momentary. Sooner or later the water flows out and it is again empty. So only apparently on the surface it looks that something is entering, but nothing really enters because it cannot hold. And then there is a third type of listener who has no holes in the bottom and who is not put like a pot upside down but is full of filth. Water can come into it, but the moment water enters it, it becomes poison. And you are all three together, sir. It is very difficult right now. You are filthy. Filthy because you are so knowledgeable. Knowledge is filth. That which you have not known is filth. Only that which you have known purifies, transforms, liberates. All borrowed is filth. You have stolen it. How it can purify you? And without knowing it, you think you know. You are a pretender. You deceive. You are a hypocrite. So when a man's head, the pot, is too full of filth, even if God comes and says something to you, the moment it enters in you, it will become poison. It will not be heard the way it has been told. You will misinterpret it. It is very difficult to change a learned man because he has already fixed ideas. He is hiding behind those ideas. I have heard about a very shy man, a young man, very shy. And he had never asked any girl for a date, and the mother was very much worried, naturally so. But one day, the mother and father were both surprised because the boy said, "I'm going for a date tonight." They were very happy. They helped him. They gave him money and they said, "Go and enjoy." And he went and he came within half an hour. So they were again surprised, "This is so soon. Did you see the girl?" He said, "Yes, I did see her. And had not I been hiding behind the head, even she would have seen me." A man of knowledge is hiding behind a hedge. Now what type of date is this? Hiding behind the hedge, he says, "I have seen the girl. And had not I been hiding behind the hedge, even she would have seen me." A man with knowledge is hiding behind hedges and hedges. His understanding is less than ever. Yes, his knowledge is more. What do you mean, sir, when you say he will understand more? He will be more knowledgeable, true. But he will not understand more. Right now he can understand more. Even it may be already too late. Had he come a little earlier, he would have understood even more. The society can be transformed totally if children start meditating, small children. They are not serious, so they are very much ready for meditation. They are joyful, playful. They take everything in fun. Sometimes it happens. When a small child comes for sannyas and I tell him, "Close your eyes," he closes the eyes. He enjoys it as nobody enjoys. The very idea that he has been taken so seriously rejoices him. He sits silently. Sometimes I have seen even grown-up people looking, just opening a little, what is happening. But small children, when they close their eyes, they really close. They close so hard, they are afraid that they will open if they don't do it hard. They really do it hard. They bring their total energy there because they know that if they are not doing it totally, then the eyes will open and they will start looking, what is the matter, what is going on. But I have seen them opening, closing their eyes really. and to see a child sitting silently is one of the most beautiful things you can come across. Children can be taught meditation more easily because they are not yet spoiled. When you come spoiled, the hard work is how to help you unlearn. I have heard about Mozart, the great composer and musician, that whenever anybody will come to him, he will ask, "Have you learned music somewhere else before?" If the man has learned, then he will ask double fees. If he has not learned music at all, then he will say, "That's okay. Even half the fee will do." People were very much puzzled because this is illogical. When somebody, a freshman comes who has not known anything about music, you say half the fee. And when somebody who has been working for 10 years comes, you say double the fee. Mozart said, "There is a reason. First, I have to clean the slate. That is the harder work. Rather than teaching, to destroy all that you are carrying is more hard. Teaching is very easy if you are available. In a virgin heart, teaching is very simple, and a child is a virgin heart." So I will not agree that he will become more understanding of the world. He may become more worldly, true. As worldly as you are right now, he is not so worldly. That's why he has come to the ashram and has become a sannyasi. He is otherworldly. He does not care a bit about money, power, prestige, all those tricks. He is very otherworldly. You can see so many young people here. 99% of my sannyasins are young people. Why young people will be so much interested in sannyas and not the old people? Old people become cunning, counting, calculating. Old people become clever. They think in terms of profit and loss. They think what is going to give them more profit. And they think of thousand and one things. Except life, they think about everything. Except love, they think about everything. They take care of all that is non-essential. Only the essential they don't take care. They are worldly. What do I mean by worldly? A man who thinks about the non-essential. Mullah Nasruddin went to his boss one day and said, "Sir, can I have your car on the 25th of this month?" The boss asked, "For what? Why do you need the car?" Nasruddin, "You have never asked." He said, "I'm going to get married on that day." The boss says, "Certainly you can have. One is not going to get married every day. You can have not only one car, all of my three cars you can have." Nasruddin was very happy, and then the boss said, "Please tell me, who is this fortunate girl?" He said, "I have not decided that yet. I thought first to inquire about the car. If I can have the car, girl I will find. That is not a big problem." This is the worldly man, the non-essential. He thinks about it first. Money, power, prestige, pull. Car, house, bank, insurance, these things he thinks for security first. And he is not worried at all about whom you are so much worried, who you are, about whom this security, for whom this bank balance, for whom this house and this car, for whom you are disappearing. Your life is slipping out of the hands and you are worried about the non-essentials. The other worldly man is one who thinks of the essential first. Your child is still otherworldly, non-worldly. Hence he is here. And whatsoever you are saying is not much relevant. It is just an argument. If you have become more understanding, then give proof of it. Then you tell the child, you go home and study and I am going to become a sannyasi. That will be a proof. And then I will think the child has to go. Then he knows the father means it. That will be something. And I am ready to exchange. You be here and let the child go. And he will go happily. Because then the father really cares and understands also, and whatsoever he is saying is meaningful. One day an old man came to me, 75 years, Indian. And of course in India, people are very much against me. Bound to be, natural. Because the thing giving sannyas to young people is destroying their life. His young son has taken sannyas. And he was very much worried and he said, what are you doing? This is against the scriptures. A person has to become a sannyasi only after 75. Give my son back. This is not the time. First he has to get married. Just as you say, first he has to become a graduate. He said, first he has to get married. Experience life first. Have children. Move into the world of the householders. And then one day, you can become a sannyasi. I said, okay. The son was sitting by my side. I can understand. I told to the old man that your son can go back, but you sit in his place. He said, why? I said, you are 75 now. The time has come. You have lived the world. Now the scriptures say that after 75, one person has to become a sannyasi. What do you say? He said, this is difficult. Then what is the guarantee that when your boy, if ever he becomes 75, who knows, he may never become 75. What is the guarantee he will be able to take sannyas if you cannot take? Give proof. You take sannyas and I will relieve your son and I will say, go and get married. Since then, that old man has never turned up. And I don't think he will ever come again. Just look at life. So many people are educated, particularly in the West. Everybody is educated now. Education is no more a value. In fact, the great thinkers of the West are thinking how to de-school society. Ivan Illich has proposed the whole program how to de-school society. And D.H. Lawrence used to say again and again that for 100 years all universities should be closed if man has to be saved. All those dreams and ideas that when humanity will become educated, everybody will be educated, there will come a paradise. That paradise has not happened. In fact, all paradise has disappeared because of education. Uneducated people are far more innocent, far more loving, far more beautiful than the educated. The man of education becomes cunning, clever, exploiting. That's all education is about, how to make you more efficient to exploit people. How to make you capable of doing less and getting more. That is the whole technique of education. What is this? What else education is? How to do nothing and get everything? Then you are the most educated person. The higher the education, the lesser the work and more the profit. The real man of education does not work at all. He simply exploits. He simply robs people. No, education is not going to give him understanding or anything. Don't enforce anything on him. Just put your mind before him. Tell him this is how you feel. Tell him certainly how you feel. It is your responsibility to tell him. But then your responsibility is finished. You told him, you made him aware of the situation. But if he decides to remain a beggar, let it be so. If he decides to remain a sannyasin and wants to live a dangerous life, let it be so. You have lived a very sheltered life. What have you gained? When I came back from my graduation, from my university, my parents were very much worried about my marriage. That is one of the most worrying problem in India, and particularly like a person like me. My parents were very much worried. It was time to get married, and they were worried I may say no. So one night when I was just going to sleep, my mother came. She sat on my bed. Told me that we are very much worried. I said, there is no need to worry. Tell me, what is the problem? She said, we are afraid you may say no. I said, I can say yes without asking what it is. You just tell me. She became very happy. She said, we would like you to get married. You choose any girls you choose. We are not concerned about that, but you get married. I told, okay, I have said yes, so I will follow it. Just one thing. I will give you 2 weeks to think about it. By marriage, have you gained anything? After 2 weeks, you simply tell me, you are my mother. And I hope that you will not deceive me. 2 weeks you meditate over the matter, that if again a chance is given to you, will you be again marrying or would you like to remain unmarried? She is a simple woman. Those 2 weeks were really hard on her. I saw her sitting and crying and weeping because the truth was coming to her again and again that it is simply meaningless. She has suffered her whole life. Marriage, 12 children, continuously taking care, this child is ill, that child is, poor family, 12 children, and all worries and worries. After 2 weeks I asked, what do you say? She said, you have put me in such a trouble. No, I will not suggest you to get married, but don't say to your father that I have said that. I told her, I will take care of him separately, you don't be worried. Because he is my father, he will also feel for me. What he has gained, he never asked me. Never. He simply avoided the subject because he knew what has happened. You have lived in the world, you are educated, you have lived a sheltered family life. What have you gained? Really anything? Really substantial? Can you really show that substance to your child? Can you say that you have lived wisely? Can you say that you are happy and if God gives you another life, you would like to live the same way you have lived? Just think, ponder over these things. I can understand your love for your child. It is perfectly good. I am happy that you have come from that far to take your child back. You must be in deep love with him. But become a little more alert. Tell your heart. Tell what you have experienced in your life. Would not it be a great desire in your heart also, if you are born again and again a life is given to you, would not you like to start it as a sannyasin? Will not it be good for a change at least? Just think over it. If your boy becomes convinced of you, take him with all my blessings. But if he is not convinced, don't go in anger. Then to go on loving him. Let him do what he wants to do. Let him have his own life experience in his own way. Who knows? When Buddha left his palace, the father was worried. When after 12 years he became enlightened and came back, then too the father was very angry, naturally. That was his only son. And the father was very old. And the son was born in old age. It was a God's gift. And the kingdom. And he was the only heir. And he left the old man. And now to whom this kingdom is going to be, to belong? Nobody to look after. And the old man is 80. And the son comes back. Of course he is angry. He came to the door and he said, I'm your father. I still feel for you. I know you have done a foolish thing. You are not meant to be a beggar, a sannyasi. You are an emperor's son. And you are meant to be an emperor. You come back. I am angry, but I am your father. I can forgive you. You come back, you drop all this nonsense, and let these all sannyasins who are following these mad people, disperse them. Their mothers and fathers must be suffering like me. I have not slept for 12 years. I could not sleep. It has been a nightmare. You have hurt me very deeply. And Buddha was standing there. And the father is angry. He goes on shouting at him. And then finally the father cooled a little. Buddha said, sir, you don't see that I am not the same person who had left the palace. Look at me. I am a totally new being. I am not the same person who had left the palace, who used to be your son. My body may look alike, but look deep into me. Something has happened. And I have come just to show my gratitude to you. That I am happy that I was born to you. That you gave me birth. I have attained. And I have come to share my experience to you. In your old age, I would like you to also attain. Otherwise, death is coming. I can see your legs are shaking. You cannot stand rightly. Death is coming. Before death comes, know what truth is, know what life is. Before death comes, realize yourself. The father looked. Certainly this is not the same man. Looks alike. Luminous is the figure. Some great light has happened into him. He cooled down. He meditated over it. He thought it about again and again. And he found it was right. His reaction was just a reaction, an unconscious reaction. Finally, he himself became a meditator. Eventually, before he died, he became a bhikkhu. He became a sannyasi. Your responsibility is great. but don't just react out of unawareness. Give the boy also a chance, he may be right. Think from his side too. Always remember that truth is nobody's monopoly, and truth has nothing to do with age. Sometimes a small child has it, and sometimes an old man has not it. And whenever you say something, remember not to judge. Just 2 days before it happened, old Paritosh has written a journal, a beautiful journal. I have looked into it. Many other sannyasins have looked into it, and we have many talented people around here, authors, poets, published novelists. They all have looked and they liked it. So he sent it to a friend who is a publisher in England. Now, a few days before he received the journal back, by mistake, by some unconscious mistake, the letter that he had written to the publisher has come back with the manuscript. And on the letter, the publisher must have given the manuscript to a reader. The reader has written, "This man is boring." First, this letter should not have come with the manuscript. It is very deep. Asleep people go on doing things. Secondly, you cannot say this man is very boring, because the reader is supposed to talk about the book, not about the man. The book may be boring. What do you know about the man? Thirdly, the reader was supposed to show his reaction, nothing to judge. He was to say, "I am bored with this book." He cannot say the book is boring. These are two different things. "I am bored with this book. This is perfectly okay. This is my response that I feel. If I am bored, I am bored." Somebody may be intrigued. When Vivek was reading the journal, she was so much interested, she could not get, unless she finished it, she could not get away from it. She had to finish it. She became so much involved. It depends on you. The person is saying something about the journal, but really he is saying something about himself. He may have felt bored. He may have no understanding about meditation. He may have never heard about sannyas. He may not know what is going on here. He may have felt completely unconnected. That is his response. But people work in deep sleep. When I was looking at this letter and the reader's comment, I remembered Bertrand Russell was traveling in America once. He could not sleep the whole night because the train compartment had so many mosquitoes. They won't allow him to sleep. He could not sleep. In the morning he was very angry. You pay, it was a first class carriage, air conditioned. But what is the point if there are so many mosquitoes in it? So he wrote a very angry letter to the director of the company. Prompt came the reply by the next post. Bertrand Russell was very happy. It was very gratifying, the reply. The director has said, "Sir, nobody ever complained. So we never knew about it. We are tremendously grateful to you that you took the trouble to inform us. Things will be put right. Next time when you will travel in our train, this will never happen. He was very happy. And again he said, "We are grateful, grateful, very grateful, blah, blah, blah." Then, suddenly he became aware of a small slip was coming out of the envelope. He took the slip out. On the slip was a handwritten message: "Send this fool the bug letter." The director must have written that message to the killer concerned: "Send this fool the bug letter." Now he was very much shocked. And then he became aware that the letter is printed. So it is not the first letter. It is being sent to everybody. Printed. But this is how things go. People are very unaware. You don't know what you are doing. You don't know why you are doing. You don't know what will be the consequence. You don't know what is the source of it. This is my suggestion to the Father. You also please meditate here, be here for a few days. See what your son is doing. Try to understand from his side. Stand in his shoes for a little while. And then explain your heart to him. But you can explain only if you have understood him, what he is doing. Otherwise, your understanding will be prejudiced. You will be a stranger. You will say something which will not fit, may not fit. Try to see his viewpoint, what he is doing. And who knows, you may be convinced rather than trying him to take back. You may start thinking of becoming a sannyasi, or you may start thinking at least of meditating. Your son may have opened a door to you. Sometimes it happens when old people have no courage, then young people open the door. Young people are certainly daredevils. They can do certain things which old people cannot do. In the whole history of humanity, it has always been because of young people that new things have happened. Never because of old people. They cannot do new things. They are so efficient with the old. Have you heard the beautiful parable about the clothes of the emperor? It happened once. A cheat convinced an emperor that he can bring dresses for him from heaven. Of course, the king became greedy. He said, "I am ready to pay whatsoever the cost you bring it, but don't try to deceive." The man said, "I will never leave the palace, because the way to heaven is not an outside way, it is an inner way. I have to go into my consciousness, from there I enter heaven. And I know the key, and I will bring the clothes for you." And remember, never before on the earth God's clothes have ever come. This is for the first time. You will be the first and the unique person. But millions of rupees are needed. The king said everything will be supplied. The king put guards on the palace, and the man was given a big room. And every day he will ask more, more money, more money. And the king once became a little troubled also. "What you are doing with this so much money?" He said, "Bribery. The guards there in heaven and the ministers and the court people, it is a difficult thing to reach to God's clothes. But I am coming closer. You just go on supplying the money." He took millions of rupees. Then the date, the cherished date came, and the men came with a very beautiful box came out. He said, "These clothes should be received in a celebration." So a great celebration was arranged. The whole capital gathered. The court, the palace, everything was decorated. It was a rare thing. Never before it has happened. It is historical. And then the chief came to the king. He said, you come here close to the box. He opened the box and then he said, there is one condition. These are invisible clothes. Certainly, God is invisible, so his clothes cannot be visible. Otherwise, it will look very awkward. Just shirts walking, coats walking. So these are invisible. But one thing I inquired when I was bringing these clothes, they said that these are invisible, but people who are born, really born from their own fathers, they will be able to see. Those whose birth is suspicious, doubtful, they will not be able to see them. He opened the box and he told the king, look how beautiful. Now the king thought, if I say there is nothing, people will think that I am not born out of my own father. This is tricky. And then he called his court people. He said, look, come here, beautiful clothes. And they all looked and they all said, never seen. So beautiful. And they started praising clothes like anything. They started competing with each other in praise. And the king said, it was good I didn't say anything. Everybody is seeing. And everybody was thinking, everybody is seeing, only I am suspicious. But it is better to keep the secret now. What is the point? And the thief took one invisible cloth, the cap, and took the cap of the king, put it in the box, gave the king the invisible cap, and by and by, the king's dress started disappearing. He became afraid. When the last piece was going, a moment was there, he started thinking, should I say the truth? But now it was too late. And the whole prestige was at stake. Not only his father's, his mother's, his whole heritage. And everybody is seeing. And the crowd is shouting. And people are so excited. Nobody is seeing, and everybody is seeing the clothes. So the king said, it is better. When everybody is seeing, why be worried? I am only seeing myself naked. Otherwise, everybody is seeing me not naked. So he took the last jump. The underwear also gone. Then he was standing nude. And people were shouting and clapping. And everybody was seeing that he is nude. Then only a small child who had come with his father and was sitting on the shoulders of his father told his father, but the king is naked. The father said, you stupid, keep quiet. You are not grown up yet. When you will be grown up, you will also see the clothes. Can't you see? Everybody is seeing the clothes. Only that small child had seen the truth and has been able to tell it. It has always been so. Only young people have been able to see the truth first because they don't worry and they don't have anything to be worried about. They have nothing to stake. And they can be courageous, daring. So who knows? Your son may have seen the truth. Don't drag him back. Put your heart before him. Talk to him. But no way, in no way, settle our grasp and force. Just show how you are feeling and feel what he is feeling here. And don't say that when you will be grown up, well educated, you will be able to understand more. The same thing was said by the father to the young child. And he was the only one in that big crowd. who was man enough to say the truth and to see the truth and to recognize it. But the father immediately hushed him. That's what fathers have been doing down the ages. The fifth question, why don't you hit me? I feel ready. Now, I don't accept your recommendation. You feel ready, that means you are not ready. This is your ego assertion that you are ready. One who is ready will never assert, because readiness comes through non-ego. One who is ready will be humble and meek. One who is ready will stand at the back of the queue. He will not try to come first. Remember, those who are the last will be the first, and those who are trying hard to be the first will be the last. Now there is no need to come and propagate that you are ready. If you are ready, I will know first. You will not know it first. So leave it to me. In fact, it is greed. And a very strange human mind. When I hit, people don't feel good. Anand Prem felt terrible. So was the case with Fat Veena. So-called Fat Veena, she is not so fat. She cried the whole morning. And so was the case with Amida. When I was talking here, she was feeling terrible. When I hit, you feel terrible. When I don't hit, you ask for it. Because sometimes the mind is so cunning, it starts thinking that by being hit, you will become special. That will be a proof that you are ready, right. That will be a proof that now you deserve being hit. But this is ego, and ego is the only barrier. And it is the ego that doesn't allow you to change. Here, I am not interested in little changes. I am not interested in reforming you. I am interested in destroying you utterly, so that utterly new is born. Less than that won't do. What you want your ego to be decorated with few medals. So you can go out and you can say, see, Bhagwan has hit me. And harder than anybody has ever hit before. I am special. This desire to be special is a disease. And sometimes it happens this desire to be special can lead you to become humble too. Because I say, those who are the last will be the first. You can start competing for the last place. Again you are competing for the first. Watch, mind is really cunning. It can play upon games, upon games, upon games. It is like a Chinese box. You open another box, you open another box, you go on opening another box, and they fit with each other so perfectly. Just a slightly smaller box inside, and again smaller, and again smaller. Ego is a Chinese box. Watch it. Otherwise, you will never get rid of it. And let me repeat it again. I am not here to reform you. Reform is an ugly word. Reform means you remain the same. Few touches here and there. I paint you here and there. You remain the same, basically the same structure. The same gestalt. Yes, made a little more beautiful. No, I am not interested in that. I am interested in your utter disappearance. So you are no more. When you are not, you will be for the first time virgin, innocent, fresh as the dew drop in the morning. That's what God is. That freshness is God. That original happening is God. That entry of the new into the old is God. When that new enters, the old simply disappears. Or the old disappears, only then the new enters. Then entry of the new and the disappearance of the old are simultaneous. In a single moment they happen. But I understand your troubles. In a New England resort town, there was a man so homely that he was the butt of every practical joke that his town folk could think up. A plastic surgeon who visited the resort on a vacation was so touched by his ugliness that he offered to change the man's face without charge. In fact, he said, just for the heck of it, I will do some plastic surgery that will make you the handsomest man in New England. Just before he put the man under the knife, the surgeon said, do you want me to change your face completely, totally? No, answered the man, not too much. I want the fellows to know who it is who is so handsome. This is how the ego functions. You want to know the fellows who it is who is so handsome. You want to know the fellows who it is who is so meek, so humble. Who it is who is standing at the back of the queue. Even if that much desire is there, the ego is completely alive, thriving. Nothing has changed. Only a total change is a change. And you need not suggest me what should I do. You leave it to me. When the time is ripe and I feel you need a hit on the head, I will do it. I will never do it because you ask. I will do it when it is needed. And you cannot understand what is needed. Again and again you misunderstand your want as a need. Your want is not a need. I understand you want it. But you want it for wrong reasons. I will give the hit when you need it, not because you want it. And when all your wanting has disappeared, you will need it. When you will not be aware at all about it, then it comes suddenly. It comes abruptly, only then it is meaningful. If you are waiting, you ask a question, and I come there and hit on your head, it will be meaningless. You were waiting for it. You were expecting it. You will be thrilled. Your ego will become a big balloon. You will go with a big chest all around. See what happens. I am ready. God comes to you only when you are not at all expecting. He comes in moments when you are completely oblivious of any desire. He comes only in moments when there is no desire, when there is desirelessness. He comes abruptly, suddenly. Exactly, it is the time when you expect that you remain closed. When you don't expect, you open. Have not you watched it again and again in life? All that is beautiful happens only when you are not expecting it. When you expect, things don't happen. And even if they happen, they don't give any blissfulness through them. All bliss is abrupt, unconnected with the past, discontinuous with the past. So please wait. Wait without expecting. Wait oblivious of all desires. Whenever anything is needed, that is my business to do it. That's my responsibility. When you become a sannyasin, it is your commitment and my responsibility. The last question. It seems to me that I am becoming really mad. You have always been. Not that you are becoming. You are becoming a little more alert about it. Mind is madness. That's why you don't look within. If you look within, you will find a mad rush. Not only one mad person is there, there is a mad crowd. And the whole crowd is at each other's necks. That's why I go on saying, look within, so says Socrates, so says Buddha, so says Jesus, look within, the kingdom of God is within. Nobody is willing to look within. They listen, they say, okay, sometime we will look. But nobody is ready to look. Why? Because when you look within, you don't see the kingdom of God, you see a madhouse. When you look within, you don't see the blissfulness of Buddha, you see just neurosis. You see the same thoughts repeating, as if a gramophone record has got stuck and goes on repeating the same. When you meditate, you start becoming aware. When you become aware, you feel you are getting mad. No. If you are becoming aware that you are getting mad, you are getting away from it, you are getting away from it, you are getting beyond it. A person who is aware that he is mad is already on the threshold of sanity. A mad person is never aware that he is mad. You can go to the madhouse and ask mad people, they will laugh. Nobody will be ready to say that I am mad. They think the whole world is mad. Accept me. This is a criterion of a mad person. He thinks the whole world is mad. Accept me. What about a sane person? Lao Tzu says the whole world seems to be very intelligent. Accept me. The whole world seems to be very clear. I am confused. The whole world seems to have clarity, transparency of mind. I am muddled headed. The whole world is clever and wise. I am an idiot. Look what Lao Tzu is saying. This is the indication of a sane man, the sanest ever. So Satisa, this is the question from Satisa. You are coming closer to sanity because you are becoming aware of your madness. Watch it. Don't get scared and don't rush out. Go into it. Look into it. Go into it and look into it. Persistent perseverance is needed. Just remember one thing. The one who is aware is not the one you are aware of. The observer is separate from the observed. If you see a mad thought running, humming inside, you are not that thought. You are the witness who knows it, that it is there. You say, it seems to me that I am becoming really mad. Then there are two things. Something is going mad and something is watching. That
water is you. Mind is always mess. That's why we don't wash the mind. Wash the mind and you will start feeling what is happening. You had always thought that you were never mad. Now you feel like being mad. Good sign. Good indication. You are coming closer home. An anecdote. A man was charged with striking a woman fellow passenger in a double-decker bus. The magistrate asked him what excuse he could offer. "Well, sir, it was like this," replied the culprit. "She sat on the seat beside me on the lower deck of the bus. Then she opened her bag, took out her purse, closed her bag, opened her purse, took out a dime, closed her purse, opened her bag, put back the purse and closed her bag. Then she noticed the conductor was going upstairs, so she opened her bag, took out her purse, closed her bag, opened her purse, put in her dime, closed her purse, opened her bag, put in her purse and closed her bag. Then she saw the conductor coming down the stairs, so she opened her bag, took out her purse, closed her bag, opened her purse, took out a dime and closed her." The magistrate could not bear it any longer. "Stop," he cried. "You will drive me crazy." "That's just what happened to me, sir," said the man. That's what is happening to your mind continuously inside. If you watch, it feels it will drive you crazy. But watching is the only way to go beyond it. Otherwise, whether you know or not, you are crazy. Just by not knowing it, you don't become a sane person. Watch it. Go into it, Satisa. And I know Satisa must be getting crazy. She has asked today almost 36 questions. She must be going crazy. But good, blessed you are that you are becoming alert. Hold to this alertness. Get more centered into this alertness. The more alert you will become, far away the noise of the mind will go. When you are really centered, the mind disappears. Because it is the same energy that is involved in the thoughts which is used in centering. When the energy becomes centering, thoughts simply flop dead. They don't have any energy. They disappear. Enough for today.